This is Novel Marketing.
I'm Thomas Umstadt Jr.
I'm James L. Rubart.
And this is the show for novelists who hate marketing but still want to become best-selling authors.
Today we're going to be talking about marketing fundamentals. John Wooden, right? Legendary basketball coach. He would take his teams, guys that have played grade school basketball and junior high and high school basketball, and he would drill them down on the fundamentals. And they'd go, we know how to do this stuff. And yet he would keep at it, because in the heat of a game, he wanted those guys to be able to go right back to those fundamentals, no hesitation. And so I think in marketing, we need to do the same thing. So we're going to be doing a series of podcasts, actually, if you want us to, on some of the basics of marketing. So we're going to start with this podcast, which we're going to call the 5 P's of marketing. Back in the 60s, McCarthy came out with the 4 P's of marketing, but we're going to take his 4 P's and then add one more from Seth Godin and lay that out for you. And again, if you like it, we'd love to hear from you to say, yeah, do more of these. So, Thomas, why don't we
dive in? The Marketing 101 series is basically what I had to go through in my very first marketing class in business school. So this is kind of chapter 2 of marketing, the 5 P's of marketing. It just helps you understand marketing. And often we're giving you kind of really specific advice of here's what you're supposed to do. We are going to be adapting these for novelists, but these aren't, it's going to help you more ask the right questions and think about it holistically more than like, do this, do X, and you will get Y results. So without any further ado, the first P of marketing is product, or in your case, your book. And this is without a doubt the most important P, because good marketing helps a bad product fail faster.
It does. Yeah, that's what David Ogilvy said. Great advertising will cause the inevitable to happen faster. So if it's a great product, eventually good advertising will create awareness for that. If it's a bad product, it will drive people to that product. And I actually have had this happen. I had a client, and I won't name them because they're a nationally known client, but I told the regional dealers, I wrote an email, I said, this is so bad, if you don't fix this, when we start this campaign, your sales will go down. and it happened, and you know, they fired me because it's my fault, right? I thought I was going to say, look at guys, this is what's coming. So anyway, not to belabor that point, but Thomas is right. The product, it always comes back to, are you writing a great book?
And it's not, when we talk about great book, we don't mean great book in the sense that your English teacher would like it. We mean great book in that, is this the kind of book that people that you're trying to reach would want to read? And so what's a good book to one person is not necessarily a good book to another person. I read very different books from my mom.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we both read the Bible. And that may be
the only book you share.
I think we both read the Chronicles of Narnia. But you know, in general, she's reading a very different kind of book. And so what she would call a great book and what I would call a great book are very different. And this is one area I might disagree with you a little bit, Jim. I think that it is very possible for a book to get lost, a great book to get lost in the million new books that get published this year. If you don't get the right people to read it initially, it won't spread. And if you're not following these 5 P's, maybe no one reads it and no one discovers it. And it's not like some historian's going to dig it up, you know, 50 years from now, because there's a million books that came out, you know, every year.
Yeah.
Which means that that's 50 million books to go through 50 years from now.
Right.
It just may not happen.
True. But let me clarify what I mean by that. And that is, it's not just the one book, it's a career. Right. So, yes, you didn't get the fire going for that one book, but you got it going for the second book. And John Grisham is a great example where A Time to Kill did not sell a lot of copies when it came out. Then he writes The Firm, better marketing for that book. That book explodes. And then people go back and make A Time to Kill a bestseller, turns into a movie, and off you go.
That's a great point. And another part of product is the product life cycle. So each product has a life cycle of when it first comes out and people are very excited about it. And the longer it's out, the less likely people are to read it. And yes, one book in a million becomes evergreen, and it's the To Kill a Mockingbird or the Moby Dick that people read for a long time. But the reality is that that's probably not going to happen to you. Like, most authors in their careers are not writing great books. In fact, there's a friend of Jim and mine that's a very successful author, and Jim was digging through his library, and he found this old book, you know, that had written, and we both totally forgot about it, and the author may have forgotten about it. And the reality is that the typical lifespan for a book is, you ready? It's 30 days. So, you know, like 30 days, and like after 30 days, a traditional publisher has moved on from that book. and they're on to the next book.
I a friend of Thomas's mine did a blog post this morning where he said 30 years ago, what was on the fiction and nonfiction bestsellers list? And I looked at those and I knew about three from each list. And I was reading books back then.
And these are New York Times bestselling books.
Yes. So it's
very true. And if you go to a bookstore, there's always the outside bookshelves.
Right.
It's like, we don't care if someone steals
these
books.
That's right.
And it's like, you look at the copyright data on these books and they're from this year. I mean, these books are not that old.
Yeah.
And so one mistake I see a lot of independently published authors make is that they have one book that they're trying to sell for too long and its life cycle has passed. And really what they need to be doing to promote that book is moving on to the next book. And the success, key to success, if you want to make a living in writing, is to learn how to write faster and keep your same level of quality. You know, that person who goes into a cave for 5 years and produces a book will be starving.
Yes, 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 they will.
Or they need another job. Or a rich spouse.
Rich spouse, yes. The final thing about product, and we've talked about this before, and please, before you start emailing us with exceptions, we know there are exceptions. But
you are not the exception.
You're probably not the exception, especially if you don't have 10 really successful books out. The situation is, it is career suicide for me to put up a sign that says James Restaurant and serve steak 1 week, sushi the next, Italian the next, and then decide, oh, I'm going to get into breakfast burritos. It just, my customers will go, I don't know who you are. I don't know what I'm getting from week to week because I love breakfast burritos, but I hate steak, so I'm not going to come. And that's what happens when you write in four different genres. People get confused. You need to have a consistent product, just like a restaurant would.
That's right. So the marketing term, marketing 101 term for this is product mix. So as an author, it would be genre mix. And the key to success here is to not mix. So if you keep your books focused, each one will cross promote the others.
Right.
And when people are like, they finish it and they are happy, if it's a good product, they're like, man, I want more of this. And if you have other books that are similar, those are easy sales. And what happens is when you sell one book, you end up selling half a dozen books. Whereas if those books are different, and I'll tell you, there's a Jim Butcher is an author I'm a big fan of. He wrote these modern urban fantasy books that I just loved, and I got and I read them all. I was like, man, I want more Jim Butcher. And I realized that he had some epic fantasy. Okay, so urban fantasy, epic fantasy. It took me 6 months to be willing to risk on a Jim Butcher epic fantasy book. I hadn't heard any friends talking about his epic fantasy books. So I was like, I don't know. And then I kind of took a pause and I was like, wait a minute. I love Jim Butcher. Like, I love his writing. Why am I so hesitant to risk on a... I mean, it's not that different of a genre. And it's another genre that I like. And so I bought the first one. And then, of course, I was hooked and read them all.
Right.
But that hesitation... You know, that's not much of a jump, and it was still hard for me.
Yes.
I'm an insider who's willing to take that risk. Imagine your average reader. They're not going to risk to jump over. So we talk about not shifting brands a lot, but that's all a part of product. The second P is price. So the key to success here, right, is to just be cheaper than everybody else. You know, as long as you're cheaper, you win.
That's right. That's right. But the problem with that is, and you're seeing it, if you are an ebook reader, if you're an ebook reader, you're seeing this happen. The price is what? For a lot of BookBub, for a lot of e-reader IQ, for a lot of quality, I mean, high quality, entertaining, well-written books, the price is what?
Free.
It's free.
And compared to free, everything is expensive.
Is expensive. Yeah. I had a situation where I read Patrick Carr's A Cast of Stones, and I got that for free. So I'm going to contradict myself a little bit here, and it's a future episode that we're going to give on pricing, but I got that book for free. I liked it so much, loved the book, that I looked for book number two. Well, that was $2.99, and I hesitated. I just thought, wow, $2.99? That's expensive. Isn't that crazy, right?
$2.99.
$2.99. And I hesitated, but I finally bought it. And I love that book as well. So it's like, well, I got to buy the third in the trilogy. No problem. And I go to Amazon. I've got a Kindle. I go to Amazon and it's $9.99. It's 10 bucks, right? Of course, earlier that day, I'd walked into Subway and gotten myself a pastrami melt for 12 bucks. But 10, that's right in my stomach and gone in, you know, a few hours. But 10 bucks for a book? You got to be kidding me. I hesitated, and I waited days and days and days before I finally bought it.
And I'll tell you, there was a moment that shifted me from being someone who read 4 or 5 books a year to somebody who read 50 books a year. And I was in college, and I was assigned a book, the kind of book you can get at Amazon, not a textbook. And I realized in this course, this book was 80% of what I learned in that class. And the book was $10 or $20. And I realized, man, college class, that's $1,500. I can get 3 books that will teach me everything I would learn in that class. Together, maybe they're $60. That's $20 per book. And compared to $1,500 for the class, $20 is an absolute bargain. But compared to free, $20 right. is unbelievably expensive. You're price gouging us. And so this is an important point we want to kind of lay out with pricing, is that all prices are relative.
Right.
You like to think that people are rational. And so they're like, well, it's a cost per entertainment hour.
Right. Talk about your movie.
Yeah. So tell people you go to a movie and it's $10 for a ticket and it's a 2-hour movie. Well, that's a $5 per entertainment hour cost. And people have no problem spending $5 per entertainment hour to go to the movies. So a book, let's say it takes you 10 hours to read the book and it costs $10. That's a $1 per entertainment hour cost.
Incredible value.
That's 5 times cheaper. And yet people are like, $10? $9.99 for a book? Are you kidding me? That's unbelievably expensive. And so we are, as an industry, trying to figure out how to price ourselves. So we had this, you know, internet thing, this digital thing, this e-reader thing happen. And it used to be that the price of a book correlated very closely to the cost to produce the book. Hardbacks are more expensive, more pages more expensive, less pages less expensive. And now that's shifting. And now the price communicates the quality of the book. So your James Patterson's, your, you know, name your big name author, they're selling at full price. They're $10 a book, maybe even $14 for an ebook. And your independently published authors, your lesser known traditionally published authors, they are the ones who are cheaper. And so you communicate value, and don't you may be like, well, I can cheat. I'll just say I'm $10. I'm just as good as James Patterson. Well, you're not. I hate to break it to you, but you are not James Patterson. James Patterson makes 20 cents for every dollar made by any author in all of publishing, which is just crazy. Like, he's that big in terms of the money that's coming into him. And so with pricing, there is no correct answer. We're not going to give you the silver bullet that at $4.99 is the best price for you to be successful. Because the reality is that you need to realize that with pricing, you are communicating value, and that how the price is seen by your readers is dependent on the pricing everybody else has. And so this is one of the kind of interesting things about marketing. It's not just about you and your readers. It's also you, your readers, and your competition. And more than any of the other P's, price is affected and influenced by the folks around you.
And we don't have a solution. We wish we had a solution. This is what you need to do. It's a difficult problem that publishers are facing, because they can't make money selling 99-cent books. But you just need to be aware of it. Some of you know I have a background in radio, and when we would do promotions where we would give away things to the audience to participate in, if we gave it away free, we would have a lower turnout than if we charged a dollar. Why? Because a dollar is, I spent money on this. I've got skin in the game. I don't want this thing to go to waste. Now think about this when you're giving your book away for free. Or let me ask it a better way. How many of you who have e-readers have, you know, over 5 books that you downloaded for free that you have not touched in a year? I could probably say over 30 books.
Yes. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Yes.
It's a quote from Jesus. Yeah. But it applies to marketing, actually.
Yes.
So if you want someone to believe in something, a great way to get them to believe in it is to get them to spend money on that thing. So that is price. So we had product. Now we have price. The third P is promotion. This is the P everyone thinks of when they hear marketing. And this is what I like about the 5 P's of marketing. It helps you understand that marketing is more than just promotion. So promotion is advertising. It's telling the world. It's spamming people on Facebook over and over and over again. And, you know, there's good promotion and there's bad promotion. And the reality, though, is that promotion, almost without exception, is expensive. It's expensive in money, but it's also expensive in time.
Right. Both of them. You might, I'll give an illustration of a way I spent my time and not my money. But in either case, it is expensive. And unfortunately, you need to budget for it. Like we talked about earlier, you've got to have something that starts that fire underneath the word of mouth. Ultimately, word of mouth is what is going to make your book sell better than any other thing. but promotion does help books sell if it's done well.
Yeah, think of the promotion as the embers that fly off from the fire.
Great.
That each land in a place in the forest, and the word of mouth is it spreading from leaf to leaf.
Great.
But without that ember first landing in the tree, there's nothing to get that fire started. I wish there was a more positive metaphor. The other metaphor is a virus spreading, which is even worse.
It's like, no, it's dandelion spreading. No, that's not good either.
Those are weeds. Yeah. So there's, it's whatever. Leaven in it. Oh, that's sin. Whatever. Okay. So, but promotion is kind of getting that triggered. And so again, this is not the most important P. Product is the most important P. So, but if the hot fire is hot enough, if the product is good enough, your promotion will help that fire spread and help that fire overcome obstacles. So a forest fire that's really going can jump over a river. You'd think that a river would be just this impassable boundary. But the reality is that with promotion, you can overcome a lot of obstacles. And a YA book that's targeted at young people can suddenly be read by people of all ages in all countries. So, you know, Hunger Games.
Harry Potter. Hunger Games.
You know, these are books that jumped over that river that you would think would be insurmountable. In reality, it's not insurmountable. Promotion and good product were part of that.
I'll give one illustration of how I spent time and not money to promote. I used to be on the air at a radio station, and I went to in Seattle, and I went to this radio station because I've maintained good relationship with them, and I have a background in sales training and public speaking and that sort of thing. And so I went to them and I said, how about a trade? I will train your salespeople in marketing and sales techniques, and you put me on the air, you interview me, put me up on your website. And that was exposure that there's no way I could spend that much money in the budget, and yet I could spend my time. And so it was a great trade for both of us.
That's right. If you're an independently published author, and we know a lot of you listening are independently published authors, we love you. I'm independently publishing a book right now, so I feel you. And this is one of the areas where I see a lot of independent published authors make a mistake, and that is that they budget all of their money for product, and they don't spend any time thinking about either the promotion P or the next P that we're about to get to. And those are the ones that really can help you be successful. And so you need to have money set aside for promotion. And then you ask the question, how do I best spend this money? I often see authors where they're like, you know, back when we were building websites all the time, I'd ask somebody, what's your marketing budget? And they're like, I don't know. You know, there was no amount of money that they knew they were going to spend. And so they had no good way of making decisions. Because if there's no amount of money you can spend, there's an unlimited amount of money you can spend, right? So you have to kind of evaluate each thing individually. Whereas, let's say you're like, I have $5,000. That's my promotion budget. Then you can ask really useful questions like, how do I get the best bang for my buck for $5,000?
And that's such an important question, because there are some places where you can spend five and it can be really effective. Same place where you spend five where it does nothing. Yet if you spent 20 at that same place, it'd be highly effective.
Exactly, exactly. And so there's tools that you can use at 5,000, there's tools that you can use at 500, and there's tools you can use at zero. And so if you're not spending any money on promotion, you're going to have to set a lot of time aside for promotion. So you can kind of break authors into two categories. There are the time-rich authors and the cash-rich authors. So ideally, we wish we were all time-rich and cash-rich. And some authors are both time-poor and cash-poor, and those authors always fail, because they aren't making a priority to succeed. So if you're both of those, you need to reprioritize your life if you want to succeed in writing. And it may be that the reason why you're time poor is you're doing something else that's more important, and that's fine. You know, success in life is not based on your publishing success.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the end of your life, and you're looking back in your life, the things that you'll find valuable and not necessarily your publishing successes. But one other thing to think about in terms of spending money and promotion is sales. So promotion is not just marketing or advertising, it's also sales. And in the book context, that means a sales team to help you get into bookstores, which leads us to the fourth P, which is place. So the first P is product, second is price, third is promotion, the fourth is place. Where can I buy your book?
The more hoops people have to go through to buy your book, the less likely they are to purchase it.
That's right. And the reality is only about 20% of books that are sold are ebooks. And so the other...
And I don't know if you saw this recently in Publishers Weekly, but physical books are up, ebooks are slightly down. So, you know, place still...
Right.
As much as we want to say the digital revolution has taken over everything, it's not true.
That's right. And the most important place in my mind, if they're like the golden standard, if you can get there, is the bookstore in the airport. Imagine somebody whose flight has just been canceled and it's going to be 10 hours, but it feels like 10 years before your flight's going to leave. They're bored. and they are tired of watching CNN talk about, you know, the weather. And so they walk into the bookstore and they are going to make a purchase.
Yes. They're not browsing.
They're not.
I'd say 95% of the people are there to buy a book.
That's right. And we would call that intent to buy. Yes. You know, it's the marketing term for that. And it's very high.
Yes.
And it doesn't just drive paper sales. They may see your book and then they pull out their iPad and buy it, the digital version. They pull out their Kindle and buy the digital version. And so that's the kind of the coup de grace to get there. It's very hard to get into airport bookstores. You know, maybe a Barnes & Noble has 10,000 books or 50,000 books on stock, depending on the size of Barnes & Noble. An airport bookstore may only have 500 books. But if you could be one of those 500 books, man, that is just tons of sales driven and sales to wealthier, more connected, more influential people. And so, you know, where to do a book signing? I would say do a book signing.
In fact, I did a book signing in an airport, and it was one of my most successful signings because people are there to buy.
That's right.
And oh my gosh, I'm meeting the author. Okay. Impulse decision. A lot of times this sounds good. I'll get a signed book. Off I go to my plane.
That's exactly right. Brandon Sanderson, who I'm a big fan of, he will do these book tours, which is just him flying from one place to another, but he'll schedule a signing in each airport bookstore, and he'll say, I'm in Terminal D at the bookstore, you know, across from Gate 34. And, you know, if I'm flying that day, I'm like, man, I'd love
to meet Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah. And he'll sign all the other books in that bookstore, and so then that bookstore staff is promoting his books in that bookstore. So that is place, and you want to make it easy for people to buy your book. And a lot of people are like, well, I go through CreateSpace and they say they get me on Ingram's Distribution, so I'm in all the bookstores. No, you're not. What has happened is you're in all the bookstores' computers. So if they type your book title into your computer, they'll bring it up and they could order it for that person to come back to the bookstore and buy it. The reality is that very rarely happens. Someone is rather going to buy it online or not buy it at all, which is the more common. And you don't get any of the browsing.
So, but he begs the question, Thomas, great, I'd love to get in the airport bookstore. How in the world am I going to do that? I'm an independent, because we have a lot of independent authors that listen to our podcast. How in the world can I do it when even traditional authors can't get in?
It requires a sales team. You have to hire professionals. There's a kind of person who gets people into bookstores for a living. And these kinds of people are called salespeople, and they're hired by publishing companies to get their bookstores. And I've seen it. I was in, I forget which airport, but not just in the bookstore, but on the shelf facing out towards the aisle was a book. And I looked at the cover. I was like, that doesn't look like a professionally designed cover. But it had a really intriguing title. It was a business book. Mm-hmm. And I flipped it on the back. Sure enough, it's a self-published book there in the bookstore. So it can be done, but it's going to require effort. And so this is one of the things you think about when you're planning your marketing for a book. Don't just think about product. Don't just think about price. Don't just think about promotion. You also want to think about place. But there's one more thing to think
about. Are we going to talk
about
that?
But wait, there's more. So the fifth P, and this is a new P. This is not a P that goes back to the 60s, but it's a P that I would say is the second most important P, and that is purple cow. Like, purple cow? What on earth is that? Why is, how is that? All these others make sense. Purple cow doesn't make sense. Well, purple cow is from Seth Godin, and it's basically being remarkable. But he made it a P so it could fit in the four P's, which I think is really smart of him. It was very remarkable of him. So remarkable has a specific definition. It means worth making a remark about. So you're like, well, my book's remarkable. Like, oh, really? So I can find out. I can do a search for your book on Twitter and see if anyone is talking about your book. Now, there are many ways to be remarkable. It can be remarkably helpful. It can be remarkably funny. It can be remarkably bad.
Yes.
So occasionally a book will get super famous for being so poorly written that everyone is talking about it. Another way to be remarkable is to be controversial. You know, you can make people angry, and angry people talk. That is a legitimate marketing strategy. And so how is your book different from other books?
And you even have to take that a step further and say, how are you remarkable? How do you stand out from the crowd? What do you do that's different than other authors? Thomas and I often say, love me, hate me, just don't ignore me. Lady Gaga is hated.
There you go, talking about Lady Gaga again. I hate that girl.
Yeah, you have a reaction. Those of you listening probably have one of two reactions. Wow, she is so passionate. I love her music. Or, I cannot believe her. I can't stand her. Very few of you are going, eh. And few of you are going, I've never heard of her.
Right.
Because the music artist that shows up at an awards ceremony wearing a meat dress is going to be remarked on. You're gonna talk about that, right? And so what can you do as a personality to make yourself remarkable?
Yeah, the easiest way to be remarkable is to be controversial.
Yeah.
To take a stand on a controversial topic and to make people angry. And this requires courage. I talk with a lot of authors at writers' conferences, and they're afraid of criticism. And they write for the critic. And you're like, well, if I soften this and soften that, I'll get less criticism. And it's true. You may get less criticism, but you also get far fewer sales because you are basically painting all of your purple cows brown.
Right.
And people will drive right by a brown cow. And so I've experienced this. I have written things that are controversial.
When Thomas says he's experienced this, he has really experienced it. In the homeschool arena, there has been a movement over the last 20, 30 years, a groundswell of you don't date, you court. And that is overseen by parents, and it's very much the old courtship model that you think of from ancient long time ago, imposed on modern society. Well, Thomas grew up in the homeschool movement, and after years and years, he thought, you know what? It doesn't work. And so he wrote a blog post, and I don't think you probably had any expectation that it would blow up this huge.
My hope was that it would reach 10,000 page
views. 10,000 page views. So over 1 million page views later, 1 million page views later, Thomas has made himself either liked or loved or hate, not ignored. And there you had a lot of people hating you for this article.
Yeah. 100,000, over 100,000 comments and likes on and shares on Facebook, but many of those were very negative. And somebody would post a link to the blog and talk about how much they disagreed with it. Or even better, write a blog post criticizing, critiquing, responding, rebutting to my blog post. Hundreds of people wrote blog posts attacking my blog post. But what every one of those people did was they linked to my blog
back
post
to your...
so that people could read my blog post and see how wrong it was. Well, here's the little secret of what happened. Google, who doesn't know if you're positive or negative, it just looks at links, sees all of these hundreds of blogs linking to my blog. And so it was like, huh, this must be a remarkable blog post, and put it really high in the search results. And so those people who were trying to hurt me ended up helping me.
Right.
And so there's no such thing as bad publicity unless everyone already knows who you are. So if you are Barack Obama and everyone in the world knows your name, there is such a thing as bad publicity. But
well said. You
are not Barack Obama. You are not the president of the United States. You are trying to be known. And so being known can be happened through people saying good things about you and bad things about you. But the key is to get people curious about you. And that's what Purple Cow is all about. So go ahead.
Well, I was just going to close, and we need to wrap up here, but Thomas said he's worked with a lot of authors, and we're insecure and neurotic, and criticism is hard. I'm raising my hand. You can't see it, but I'm raising my hand here in the studio. I struggle with that myself, and I have to push myself out there to do that. So know that you're not alone in it.
So we hope that these P's, product, price, promotion, place, and Purple Cow, are helpful for you as you plan your marketing. And hopefully you're planning, that maybe should be the sixth P, but it's not. Like, figure it out ahead of time, put together a marketing plan. We'll help you ask the right questions. And let us know if this is something that you want to hear more of. If you want more Marketing 101 type sessions from us, more episodes on this. And it's okay if you say no. Be like, no, Jim and Thomas, this was a really boring episode. We'd rather you talk about the kind of sexier, newer, shiny stuff. And we want to hear that. But if you want us to go through basic Marketing 101 textbook topics and then apply them to writing, we want to know. Let us know at novelmarketing.com.
This week's episode has been brought to you by My Book Table. If you want to make money on your WordPress website, you put this widget on there and essentially it will do that for you. Now, there is a free version that you can get, but if you want the version with all the whistles and bells, you have to pay a tiny amount of money for it. But you can get 10% off if you just use the coupon code NOVELMARKETING. Again, that's My Book Table.
And you can find that at mybooktable.com. Just use the coupon code NOVELMARKETING. We would love to hear from you, good, bad, the ugly. You can leave us a comment at novelmarketing.com.
This has been the Novel Marketing Podcast, giving you novel ideas on how to promote yourself and your writing offline, online, and everywhere in between.